the wine glasses are still out there. Man, we had such a party last night, and you'll never know about it here, Feudal Podcast listeners, because I immediately shit canned both of those cards, two full cards of really nothing relevant, but at least we started hitting it.
Star Wars stuff.
There was a bit, but we need to do, like, we should do that as a proper, like, let's do, like, a review of all of each movie or something.
You missed all the good bits. There's good bits in there. There's good little comedy pieces.
Yeah, but they were like, point, it was like panning for gold or something, and there was no way to identify them or anything. Yeah, I know. Well, we can do that in, the, in a better context. Anyway, y'all, welcome to the Feudal Podcast. If you want to send us emails, you know about the whole futilepodcast@gmail.com thing. Tonight, we are going to talk about,
I don't know, you know, Step Brothers was, I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable. It was very one note and very,
derivative of the former stuff.
No, not even that. It's ridiculous to a point where it's entirely 100% unbelievable, but there are some very funny moments and characters in it, the least of which is not Will Ferrell's brother, who I totally forget the guy's name. He's in a bunch of stuff, and he always plays a total douchebag. He's on that show on HBO about the people having sex all the time.
Oh, the one with David Duchovny?
No, that's
the Californication.
No, that's on Showtime. This is that one that had the girl from Profiler on it.
Oh, the redheaded girl.
No, the blonde.
The blonde with the bug eyes that was in Universal Soldier?
Yeah.
We're thinking too hard about this.
I was looking him up.
Okay, so yeah, I can give you sort of my non-viewed impression of it. It looks like what you said. It looks like a pretty ridiculous scenario. I mean, is Mary Steenburgen like supposed to be their mother? And she's not even that much older than them.
Is Will Ferrell's mother? Ah, she's. I mean, you can tell how old she is.
But she's not older than old enough to be Will Ferrell's mother.
She's 20 years older than him.
IRL?
Yeah. She's in her 60s. She's in her early 60s.
Oh wow.
And he plays a 39-year-old. John C. Reilly plays a 40-year-old. The brother Adam Scott is the guy's name.
Okay.
Adam Scott. Yeah.
What else has he been in? Because I don't recognize the HBO thing.
Let's see. Let's get a picture for him for you.
Oh, excellent. Picture for me. Is it signed? Can you print it out? Signed and notarized?
This guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's in a bunch of stuff. Anyway.
He's kind of too goofy looking to really pull off full-on douchebag.
No, he always plays a dick. He always plays a... But this was the most dickish. This was like one of the most cruel, hurtful, like... dick of all dick characters that I've ever seen. I really appreciated his character the most, I think. They played their standard thing. Mm-hmm. They played every single character they've ever played exactly the same.
You mean Farrell?
Farrell and Riley. Same thing. Except for they're even stupider. They're really, like... I mean, all of McCain...
Stupid, Arrested Development, all that kind
of
stuff.
All of McCain Apatow stuff, every single thing, pretty much, has been about someone who doesn't want to grow up. The person stuck in adolescence. Yeah.
Well, I think Anchorman wasn't really about that. It was more about, like, a guy
that's
sort of a big fish in a little pond.
That's what it was.
He
plays the same guy. So, yeah. Someone who is... They're both full of unfounded arrogance, and they're both completely, utterly retarded. Yeah, that's the main thing. There's some very funny stuff with them. I think they made the logical leap to go to rated R for this because I think they figured if people saw this movie without there being some really filthy swear words in it, then they would be like, this is kind of boring. This is kind of the same old thing that we've seen from Adam McKay over and over. But since it's rated R, that you also have to hear them saying completely rotten, filthy things to each other and talking about masturbating all the time.
And sometimes
it's just the South Park effect. You throw a few of those in there and you get a few little laughs.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of laugh moments in it. And it was just so, like, I don't know. There's some funny stuff. There's some things that fall flat. I think I enjoyed it... Talladega Nights was just a better movie, but I think this had... I mean, this is one of those small-scale things. It's really just about these, like, four or five
could have
people.
Been a play, almost.
Yeah,
it's just funny little sketches that are connected by this ridiculous storyline, right?
But the brother, played by Adam Scott, is this utter... He's constantly talking about how he was just... like, for instance, when the parents get married in the beginning, and the mother stands up and she's like, you know, my youngest son, Derek, couldn't be here because of a very important fishing trip. But, you know, my older son is here, Will Ferrell. He's like, he doesn't want them to get married or anything. Mm-hmm. And then later, he comes over for dinner, this guy and his wife and his kids, and they introduce them in the car, the dick brother, by them singing Oh, I totally forget the song. It was some like 80s rock song. And he's got a Bluetooth on, and he's driving like this expensive Range Rover thing, and his wife's sitting in the front seat. And he's like, "All right, everyone, let's do it right this time." And it introduces them for like three minutes of them singing this very complicated a cappella rendition of this 80s rock song, and him being super serious and like making sure they all hit all the right notes. And his wife's a little flat, and he flips out on her. And that's when you first see them. And then like, and he's like, "Yeah, sorry, I couldn't make it there." He's like, the dad's like, he's like, "Well, it was a very important fishing trip, right?" He's like, "Mark Cuban was there." He's like, "Yeah, the Cube was there." And he starts naming all these other people that wouldn't have been together, but like he was there with them. And he has this ridiculous job. He's like the vice president of the Western Seaboard's most prestigious helicopter leasing company or something like that. You know, like, and he's got a bunch of friends who he works with who are, it's like the super alpha male, total like quasi gay thing, except for it's not like the Future Man thing from Bottle Rocket, but it's like those type of guys, like the locker room guys are like, "Yeah, nice dick, woo," they high five, stuff like that. But it's all those guys from like the Daily Show and stuff, and the Colbert Report, like I forget the guy's name,
like Ed Helms, and
no, it's what well, it's the big burly guy who used to be a comedy team.
Oh, Rob Riggle,
yeah, uh-huh. Riggle, yeah. So yeah, him and another guy, and they're, you know, they're all kind of funny. It was good. I think the weirdest thing about the movie was that it had this really kind of like dark filtered look to it. It really didn't look. I mean, maybe it was because a lot of indoor scenes and a lot of McKay's stuff so far has been stuff set mostly outdoors and a lot of outdoor bright daylight stuff, like even Anchorman.
Yeah, a lot of San Diego
and they're outside.
Stay classy, San Diego.
And then Talladega Nights is a lot of being outside and everything. And this just totally looks like a very carefully lit indoor drama movie, but it's then the most retarded comedy you've ever seen. So I definitely think it's worth seeing. You're not a person who loves comedy as much as I do, so you might find it less.
I probably attractive. Would like the four or five scenes, and I'd probably laugh to, you know, seven or eight times. Yeah, I'll wait for DVD. I don't think I need to see it on the big screen.
So. I don't think anyone needs to.
Yeah.
There's no need. It's going to make a little bit of money.
So you would say that it's not as good, well-structured in film as something like Talladega Nights, but it's a funnier movie?
When I first saw Talladega... I got to say, I have a problem with Talladega Nights because I utterly hate NASCAR and rednecks and like Midlands, Heartland, American culture.
And Toby Keith.
And Toby Keith and country music, and I hate it. I like.
You know you're going to get a boot up your ass, right?
I'm going to, probably, but I hate it so much. I am so, like, I've got this, it's just fueling rage right now into me.
But the people that made that movie hate it too, right?
I don't know. I think what they saw was that there was a huge market to be tapped into for a comedy because a billion people saw it. Made a lot of money.
Well, you know, the blue collar comedy tour, and you know your redneck if your porch and that, collapses and kills more than three dogs.
Yeah,
I remember we were doing our old buddy Sam Glidden and Kevin Blevin were in my geometry class back in high school, and we were supposed to be doing proofs, and they were. If what were called the if-then statements, and they asked our grouchy old teacher named Mr. Rooney's from Ferris Bueller. I think Rooney was our teacher.
Okay,
mustache, like, kind of talk like this. Call me Strobe,
like Nick Rooney's dad.
Possibly, I don't know. I don't really care.
All
right. That's not really relevant to the story, other than just they asked him, "Hey, could we use redneck jokes for these if-then proofs?" And then they did the porch one, and he's like, "No, Glidden." Blovin, not gonna do that. Yeah, good times in the geometry. Good time in the geometry class.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I agree with you. I really don't care for a lot of that stuff. But I'm it's like the same with the way I feel about like organized like Bible Belt style religions, sort of too. Is I don't really care for it that much. But I'm almost more turned off when people sort of backhandedly parody it that I feel like aren't really coming from it. Like, I think, I don't mind, and I even think some of the, like, blue-collar stuff is kind of funny. Like, but, you know, they're making fun of their own culture, kind of, and when people do that, that's all right. I mean, at some point it becomes a hokey bullshit thing, and that gets tired, too. And I'm never one to kind of go to being offended about stereotypes before I'll just laugh at something I think is funny. But, Yeah, I mean, I think I would probably have agreed with you about that.
Well, anyway, so that was the disclaimer. I really did find it very funny. There were some very funny moments, and they, you could tell they put a lot more care into that one than this was really seemed very thrown together.
Yeah, and marketing-wise, it didn't seem like it was really being... And to put it out in the summertime like this seems kind of like a bad idea.
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of other comedies going up against it right now, so...
I know, but it's like really no... People aren't dour in the mood to just see like a stupid funny comedy in the summer. They want to see some big hospital blow up or right. You know something like that.
I don't have a problem with marketing. They actually started marketing a long time ago too. It just seems weird to me that this movie would have been made because it's like something that some low budget independent guy would have made for his first comedy. It's exactly what it's like. And Talladega Nights was this massive undertaking with. It was actually a very expensive movie to make because anything with race cars and junk is. It's like you have to spend a lot of money on all this stuff and crashing and.
They've got the background. I mean, they gotta either rent out some. They gotta fill the stands, or they gotta maybe they CG that. I'm not really sure. But they did to really get on board with NASCAR and everything. They probably shut down a freaking race so that they could shoot part of the movie at one point. That probably set them back a lot. Do you get the impression that maybe these guys are all just, and I mean, sometimes that's fun when you know that, like, it's like a group of guys that actually are friends in real life and they do their little, funny or die things on the internet and all that stuff. But do you get the impression that maybe this is just sort of like it was spawned from some dumb sketch when they were talking to each other one time and they just, they're in enough positions of power. Between McKay and Farrell and even Riley, they can kind of just, they're kind of just being allowed, hey, yeah, you guys, you come with a funny sketch and you make it work. What 40-Year-Old Virgin was. It was a funny sketch.
Farrell's able to make anything he wants at this point because of how much money he's made with other things. But I think that after Talladega Nights, everyone liked the chemistry between Riley and him. And they probably just said, what about a thing with us as brothers? And we're 40 years old and we live with our parents. And I'm pretty sure it was exactly like that. Yeah. And they're like, let's do it. And then they took it to the studio and they said, let's do it. Because it's not going to cost much and you're going to make at least your money back.
Probably, so. Yeah.
But I really did enjoy Talladega Nights the first time. What I haven't enjoyed is all the stupid catchphrases that have come out of it and stuff. There's always people at work who are saying things. People always talk about making Sweet Baby Jesus Cry and things like that, like various lines from the movie that were funny the first time, but it's not funny then to hear rednecks that I come across quoting them like it's funny to them too, when it's really kind of supposed to be insulting to them, but at the same time tapping into their culture and something they can laugh at about themselves. But anyway, like that, his character was less interesting to me in that because he had some like big lofty dream about, his big lofty dream was just that he had this lifelong need to go fast for whatever reason with his father and junk like that, which is really stupid. And that was the same problem with Owen Wilson, the car, its motivation in the movie Cars was that he just had a need for speed and he needs to go fast, and that's garbage. That's not a real motivation. In Anchorman, it's a real motivation, which is he's a narcissistic asshole who needs attention and love, and when he stops getting it, like, he's that insecure. It's like he feels
the need for the city.
That movie is so much more farcical, and that was still a much more like human relatable motivation.
Oh sure.
But that's why those movies are funny, because it's funny to laugh at someone who's that, like, that's why It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is that funny, because these people are narcissistic and vile, and it's utterly human, and it's relatable, and you laugh at it because you think, I've done that many times.
See that, and you're like, it's almost like, definitely with Mac, anytime he's with his dad, and you're just like, that's so harsh.
He's begging for it.
He's just like, wow, you're like, wow, you're really that's so terrible.
I've been watching the first few episodes of the third all the way through now. I'm like five in, but, just the first moment of the third season where they're walking out of the bar in the back and Dennis is talking about how they set everything up so quickly in that show. They set it up quickly.
Yeah. Because the whole thing is that they have to do their quick little setup and then they cut to the title card, which basically tells you the episode.
But they do a great job of setting up every character's thing in that thing.
Generally. Oh yeah, usually, yeah.
And what they do is Dennis comes out and he says that he just watched An Inconvenient Truth. Uh-huh. And he's suddenly very gung-ho about, like, his arc ends really quickly because very soon he comes up to some asshole guys who were at the trash place. And they basically call him a poser. Uh-huh. And so he instead of like trying to change, his immediate thing to come up with is he needs to get revenge on these guys. And so he gets this long, complicated scheme to bang this guy's girlfriend, which is always what his thing is. But the greatest thing is that like it starts with him saying that, and then Max like, and then he throws his cup against the wall and it like shatters, and like he's like, what are you doing? And what's funny is that like two episodes later, he was pissed. Two episodes later, they're sitting there drinking beer before they try out for the Eagles, and then they throw their bottles. There's like hundreds of people everywhere, and they smash them on the ground. And Dennis like sees Mac do it, and he does it too. So like two episodes later, he once again does not care whatsoever. But it's just... And then the funniest thing in that first episode was they go they're all there looking at the trash, and Frank's digging around and stuff, and suddenly you hear Charlie stamp. He finds that scimitar.
That's
and he
awesome.
Screams and, yeah. Everything okay? And then the greatest line I've heard in any of these episodes so far is when he's trouncing down this mountain of trash, swinging a thing, and he says, "You could cut the hump off a camel with this thing and drink its milk off the tip." And it's the most ignorant, like, I love it, dude. I love it. The lines are so great.
I was just...
You could cut the hump
off
a camel.
I don't even know if I ever heard that line, because I was laughing so hard as soon as he found it. And
it was tramping.
Yeah. Oh my God, you still got that thing?
Yeah.
Who would throw this out?
And then
if they start like that, with the whole Apocalypse Now thing.
Well, Mac and Dee are painting the baby, and they're all fighting over the sword, and they're standing over it. And then the two cops and the welfare
social service
officer
lady
comes
in.
Yeah. And they see them standing over the baby with a sword and them painting it.
Oh, my God. It's good stuff. Yeah. Yes, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. We talk about it a lot.
I know, it always comes
good
back
stuff.
To something like that. It really is.
It really does.
Comic
in terms of what makes for good comedy.
And so that's why Anchorman, like, you know... You go back and it really is like, it's pretty light fare. It's not any sort of like comedy with, you know, it's not something.
The darkest thing is probably the dog getting kicked off the bridge
by
Jack Black.
It's not a comedy with like artistic merit, like something that the Coen brothers or somebody would come out with that has like, even though like the Big Lebowski is totally and utterly devoid of anything worthwhile also.
Yeah.
It's done in a very artful way. And
yeah.
So you take it as like a more meaningful, weightier thing, even though
definitely,
it's, you know,
yeah,
and explore some themes and junk.
It's making fun of higher things,
yeah,
but it's still being stupid about
Anchorman
it.
Anchorman does absolutely none of that, but it is very wildly inventive and funny and original for what it was at the time.
Yeah,
and now they're just copying that over and over, and each one becomes weaker and weaker, I think, which is the way those things usually go. But Apatow stuff's done that as well. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's tougher to do with Apatow because he's only done two, really. He did 40-year-old version.
I'm talking about everything he has his fingerprints all over. Right? I'm talking about what the movies that he has his handprints all over that are all his highly produced things that are not
involved. It becomes sort of like the two geek guys with the whatever, and then the chicks come get involved.
Yeah, and the comedy, you know, remains very similar in it, and the lines and everything. And there's actually a moment with Seth Rogen has a really small part in Step Brothers, and his dialogue, it just sounds like that was stuff that Apatow and him came up with, and not stuff that McKay and Ferrell came up with. Like there's the slight differences in their things, like where Rogen just says like kind of observational stuff and makes it sound like, I can't believe this is happening right now. And Ferrell McKay's stuff is just they're the ones on the opposite end of the coin that are saying and doing the most ridiculous, retarded thing possible and acting like it's totally normal. And that
definitely.
You should be not only accepting but loving of them because of it.
I wonder what it'll be interesting to see Rogan in Pineapple Express and in the Kevin Smith film, because those are two directors that have been
got it.
But those are two directors that have kind of done their own thing, and I don't know if Apatow is involved in production on either of those films
Apatow
at all.
Apatow was involved with Pineapple Express.
That sounds about right. But Gordon Green is really sort of
he's the director, but they actually tapped him for it after it was all thought up and everything. They said, "How would you like to direct this?" And he said, "I would love to direct something that I'll get paid for."
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
That's what he said.
It looks like a fun sort of like 80s style adventure movie where two like idiots are kind of.
And it has a good look to it. That's what I like about the David Gordon Green thing is that it looks very good.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Like the look of it looks.
And so that'll be interesting. I'm not so sure, but I saw the first trailer for the Kevin Smith one where they were like auditioning people.
Yeah.
And it almost just seemed like, really? Like it's just going to be dick and fart jokes for 2 hours, and that's going to be kind of funny, but
Seth Rogen has a really, like...
Yeah, his delivery is really good.
His delivery is good, and he's got
some of that
charm to him,
and
I think that'll work well with a Kevin Smith thing, and I think that you'll probably see more of him.
It might, but Seth Rogen also has a sort of arrogance to him sometimes that I think with the... it's saved by the sort of Apatow charm cuteness aspect to his character. Usually there's something there, and with Smith sometimes that isn't always there. It's just, you know, you're just a pretentious,
you know,
sort of douchebag, right. And so he I don't know, we'll see.
You know, the one thing spoiling the end of Step Brothers a little bit, not so much, but just a little bit. The path it takes, I almost felt like this was poking fun at, like, not poking fun, but making mention of the Apatow thing, where you take the adolescent person, mm-hmm. for instance, in Knocked Up.
Absolutely, it's always the best example.
And you just have them remain completely adolescent until the very end, where they realize in order to grow up, they have to give away everything fun and
yeah.
great in life.
You have to sell all your toys.
Yeah, exactly. It's the sell all your toys. It's the 4-year-old version of crap. And they become a totally different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like
they tuck in their shirts.
I felt like they're making fun of that, because at the end of this, they both
are the same.
Have to do that. No. But then at the end, their dad's like, you both look utterly miserable, and I'm utterly miserable. So at the very, very end, they both do something utterly, completely retarded. And it's actually kind of funny, and it's a funny moment. And they took that whole thing where, like, you have to grow up, and they said, screw that. You don't really have to. Just do whatever you're going to do. I felt like it was maybe making fun of it. Because even the did you see Sarah Marshall? Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
That one's very good, and it's a little bit different just because Peter Seagal is so much less...
Jason Seagal.
Jason, yes. Steven?
Steven.
Steven Seagal?
He's like, Sarah, so you're going to break up with me? You really think that's a wise decision?
He kills her.
DMX shows up.
He's able to... He seems a lot... He's a lot more vulnerable than... Rogan is.
Yeah.
And so it was like a Rogan movie, but by putting a different actor in it, it seemed a lot more adult, because he's a lot more vulnerable and a little more realistic.
Even yeah.
So anyway, but...
I could see that. From Freaks and Geeks, I could see that.
Yeah.
Because they were both in that.
Right.
And they both had that sort of, you know, Rogan was kind of just like a stoner and didn't care, right. and Siegel was kind of a sober and didn't care, but then he started caring about things, and he fell in love with that girl,
right.
And then she dumped him because he was too into her,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, then he, you know, the, his transformation, I think, was one of the more interesting character transformations in that show, probably right. one of the only character transformations in that show at all,
mm-hmm.
I think everybody else kind of just did their thing. But yeah, they're definitely sort of a, oh, what, really, oh, you mm-hmm. know, and you kind of feel for him a little bit.
I don't know, I kind of think that was maybe better than a lot of the Apatow stuff. Has a lot more like straight up comedy, but that one had I don't know, just maybe like more real emotions.
Well, I think we're getting to sort of an interesting topic there when we talk about like a well-structured film versus, like you say, like Step Brothers. It sounds like sometimes with these comedies, maybe they're the Apatow things, maybe they're more the McKay, Ferrell things, where it's just like they've got the idea, because they both came out of SNL, where, you know, it's a compartmentalized joke
mm-hmm.
that has a beginning and a middle, and usually not even an end. If
right.
you ever watch SNL, almost
nothing.
I mean, even Tim and Eric, they don't even have very good endings for most of their bits. I mean, it's really tough to do that with a comedy joke, or, you know, Whitest Kids You Know.
Mm-hmm. Whitest Kids You Know is a good example.
Exactly. So really what you have to do then, okay, we call it a movie, is we'll come up with a couple that are thematically similar. You know, hey, this guy's an idiot and he has to get a job. Hey, this guy's an idiot and he has to, you know, get a house. Hey, this guy's an idiot and he has to, you know, do this and that. And you put them all together, and then the story is about, hey, this guy's an idiot and he has to grow up and get out of his parents' house and get a job and get his own place, and there you go. And we've got funny sketches here and there, and if the sketches themselves are funny,
right,
then that's funny. But I mean, you know, maybe that's the structure that's based on isn't that good. I mean, I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's almost like a house with interesting rooms that ultimately isn't a very, like, functional house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got weird right. hallways that don't connect well, and open foyers that let birds fly in, and
right.
it's bat country and parts of it and stuff.
It's just, it was just like, I don't know. I understand what you're saying about the sketch thing and the skit thing. And for instance, that's why, like, Mr. Show and Monty Python's Flying Circus always... The sketches didn't end. They just went into each other until
mm-hmm.
it ended, like, very unceremoniously, usually on something absurdist or non sequitur
yeah.
that had nothing to do with anything. They would say goodnight, you know, and then it would end. I'm not mean to belittle Step Brothers at all by saying that. And I actually think that it's refreshing to see comedies like that. It just felt a little weird just because of the people involved. Because at this point, anything that Will Ferrell does is like a big event, because he really is like the biggest name in comedy now. And
did you see Blades of Glory or Pro Sport or what is that? Semi-Pro?
I didn't see Semi-Pro.
Yeah, I've seen both of those.
Blades of Glory I actually enjoyed, despite myself.
Yeah, I did too.
And I like the character he plays. He played in that more than in this. He plays more of like a nice guy who's really kind of like a weakling and a pushover little kid type person, and he's the nicer of the two, and John C. Reilly's kind of the dick. And Blades of Glory, he's just an utter douchebag.
I think he does that better, dark and mean.
And I just like that. I like that one better.
Yeah. Semi-Pro was probably that combination of the two, you know, the arrogant, trying to control things. It was maybe one of the more, like when you talk about like the character with the motivation thing, it was probably like the character motivation was pretty solid there, but then everything else around it was just really kind of weak, and I don't think that they had a lot of really good jokes. I mean, it was like, sure, we'll make fun of the 70s a little bit, but there's only so much you can get from like sports comedies. I mean, usually there has to be more of a team thing, I think. If you just have like one guy that's supposed to be your funny guy, and then you surround him with a bunch of, like, you know, like Andre 3000 and Woody Harrelson. Harrelson is a pretty good comedic actor, you know, from like Kingpin and stuff. But.
Well, the best sports comedies are ones that are set in a real world. Like, I mean, White Men Can't Jump is a great movie.
That's really a like Bull drama a great, in a lot of places.
Well, I know, and that's the thing is that they're set in a real world, and so it's like a comedy drama. In the end, it's really the
consequences
comedy.
Are stronger. Yeah.
Ron Shelton stuff is usually always good. I mean, Bull Durham and gosh, what the hell was that one he did that was, you ever seen Play It to the Bone?
That's the boxing one that he did with Anthony Banderas and Woody Harrelson?
Yeah.
No.
That's pretty interesting. I don't know, like, those are good. I really like, Slapshot.
Yeah, I know you like Slapshot.
Yeah, I mean, they're
it feels, you know what, Semi-Pro has a similar aspect to Slapshot where it's like, they're getting sort of phased out. It's it's the Flint, Michigan team that's going to disappear if they don't win enough, and it's sort of the underdog story and all that kind of stuff. So you've got all that there. It's just like I think it's like what you said. Comedy is getting it's tough because either you've got the funny little sketch idea, and you can put enough of those together and tie them together thematically to create what's not really a very well structured narrative, but it's a funny movie. You know, you go, you sit down, you're like, I laughed a bunch, but it was kind of a shitty movie, you know? Or you get something that's, you know, like the typical comedy structure, which is, you know, you're the underdog, you're pathetic, you know, dumb things happen to you, you know, it's slapstick, you know, you slip and fall in the mud, and then everyone laughs at you, and the girl, you know, laughs at you, and then the douchebag jock guy takes her, and they walk away, and then you get her in the end, and it's like an Adam Sandler movie, it's Joe Dirt or whatever else, which can have some funny little bits in them, too. But yeah, they all get become kind of derivative at a certain point, and it's tough.
Well, something gets successful because it changes it a little bit, and then they copy that a few times, and then that gets boring, and then there's something else that comes out that...
That's just the cycle.
There's a variation on it. And one of the reasons why the early Adam Sandler stuff was funny was because the variation was that it wasn't an underdog, it was an overdog, and he was a total dick.
Mm-hmm.
And... Even in Happy Gilmore, he wasn't a winner. He was someone who kept bombing out of everything he did because of his terrible anger problem.
Yeah.
But he was a dick. He really was. And he, you know, the only thing he really cared about was his grandma, and that's like his soft spot, and that's why he does what he does. But like Billy Madison, he's just like the worst person in the world.
Then he
transforms into, I think you've pointed out before, that the ending is one of those things where he does the right thing, and then he gives a little speech at the end to everyone and says how he's going to become a teacher, and you know, gives away his multi-million-dollar business to Carl so he can focus on being a teacher and do some real good in the world, which is really contrived. And stupid,
but, that's dumb.
You know,
I think parts certain things that I really dislike in some of that derivative stuff I really don't like in comedies, but God, you know, the comedies that throw in just like really harsh drama at the end or in the middle. It seems like Robin Williams did a handful of those sometimes where it was just kind of like all of a sudden it gets really melodramatic and kind of hokey and weird, and you're just kind of like, I don't know what's going on with this. Is it supposed to be funny? This isn't funny anymore. It's just gotten stupid and contrived, and I hate that kind of crap, like Patch Adams and stuff.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
The funniest movie about divorce a kid has ever seen.
I'm sure.
The movie is heartbreaking. Like, I mean, if you're a little kid watching it, when it first came out, a lot of people our age were like in our early teens or like late kid years or whatever, and it was like he does this ridiculous scheme dressing up like a woman so that he can try to get his kids back and maybe get his marriage back. And then at the end, they're like, him and Sally Fields are like, or she's just like, this just isn't going to work. We're not going to get back together. And it's really, like, damaging. It was really damaging to me. I was like, what's the point of this stupid movie?
Yeah, it was a little nihilistic.
It's back in his kid's life. Who cares?
Yeah.
The family's not together. He still has to visit every once
and
in a while.
And he's not going to get hit skins with Sally Field, which is really what it was all about, right?
You miss out on that, man. You got to smack the flying nun around.
Exactly. Okay, so I hate to press you on it, but what do you want to do? Letter grade for Step Brother?
I'm going to give it a B-.
D minus.
It was enjoyable, and it was very meaningless. It was much funnier, I think, than a sketch. Like you were talking about it being a sketch, and it actually had decent movie structure, but it was also something that did not deserve to be made, I don't think. Here. Yeah. Okay. Okay. If you need to take her home, yes, that's totally fine. Yeah, absolutely. All right, love you.